Market View on Money FM 89.3.
You're listening to Money FM 89.3, and we are roughly five days, that is, since President Joe Biden assumed control of the White House in the U.S., and already many investors, especially the Asia-Pacific space, have been asking questions as to what the new Biden administration will actually mean for Asia-Pacific markets, specifically what it'll mean for Forex, for the Forex space, and also the key economic relations between the two largest economies, the United States and China. Well, today on Money FM 89.3, we're joined by Mr. Martin Hennecke, the Asia Investment Director at St. James's Place, and they have a couple of thoughts as to what the next 4 years will mean for Asian markets and what these currents will be coming from Washington, D.C. as they head out across the Pacific. Mr. Hennecke, thank you so much for joining us today. Glad to hear you and your loved ones are in good health and safe during these times, and happy 2021. Glad to get your thoughts today. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much. Yes, we are all very safe and good here in Hong Kong. Of course, the situation still isn't perfect here as well with the lockdowns, but as good as it can be given its circumstances. Start off by giving my brief take on, you know, what might change in terms of the Biden administration. So obviously China has been reaching out already, not really waiting for what happens with the election, but has been trying to improve relations with Asia generally. You know, RCEP signed in November, that's been talked about a lot, which once it fully comes through will be the biggest free trade area in the world. And then in December, the EU-China investment deal was signed just before the start of 2021. And what I found interesting about that actually is that the incoming Biden administration already sought to basically derail the EU-China deal being signed. And personally, you know, that makes me a bit doubtful that relations are going to very quickly get a lot better of the United States and China. The question, though, is, of course, for whom is that going to be a worse situation, for China or the U.S.? And given China's strong economy, perhaps that's something the U.S. might want to ponder harder. You know, last week the GDP figures came in for China at 2.3%. Analysts have been busy revising the date, but then there's the expectation of China overtaking the U.S. Back down to as soon as 2026. And that doesn't even account for the fact that when you adjust the Chinese economy for the undervaluation of its currency and look at PPP adjusted statistics, it's actually already 16% larger. So China definitely shouldn't be underestimated here. We think really getting better relations is at least as important for the U.S. as it would be for China.
Absolutely. And you hit on currencies a while there, Mr. Hennecke, because this is also very important. We cannot talk about China and the U.S. without mentioning their respective currencies, especially with all these accusations from out west coming to China about being potential currency manipulators. We've heard this phrase actually repeated over the last 4 years. But we've seen a seeming reversal in the last 12 months. China, or Beijing at least, seems to have a new stance in tolerating a stronger yuan. And meanwhile, you have the Treasury Secretary nominee Janet Yellen indicating in recent comments that they are not pursuing a strong U.S. dollar. We've seen the softening greenback become a major theme for markets heading into 2021. Could this at least ease these ongoing accusations of currency manipulation coming from China? And how might this play into St. James's Place overall outlook for Forex markets moving forward, given the fact that we're talking about two of the most important currencies in the world, the renminbi and the greenback?
Sure. So, well, let me give you the brief answer first. I would say investors shouldn't underestimate the potential, you know, of the renminbi to rise. It's not 100% a given, but you definitely wouldn't want to short it. And for a number of different reasons. One is just China's strength. I talked before about the strength of the economy and the difference in the GDP valuation, which indicates this undervaluation on a purchasing power basis. So that means there's a catch-up potential. Also, we know that China is the world's largest goods trader already, but in terms of the share of currency use in global trade, as of December last year, the renminbi only represented 1.9% versus the dollar 38.7, euro 36.7. So there's also big possibility there to catch up. At the same time, in the U.S., you have this huge budget deficit, and it's not even just the coronavirus issue. They were already around the 1 trillion level before and just got larger afterwards. So we were around 1 trillion in 2019, and then last year, fiscal 2020, 3.1 trillion. The first quarter 2021, 573 billion. And I'd just like to give a brief quote here of Alan Greenspan from February 2020, because that was before the corona stimulus measures. And he's saying, unless we bring those extraordinary budget deficits under control, history tells us that there's going to be a much more rapid rate of price increases than we have seen. So dollar weakness, inflation picking up, is a big theme there at the same time. Now, the only problem is, though, does it necessarily mean that all other currencies, including renminbi, et cetera, will significantly rise against the U.S. dollar? And here is sort of the challenge for those other countries. Nobody really wants their exports again, to the U.S. To sharply reduce. And so everybody's sort of trying to keep appreciations in check. In fact, on Friday, you saw the news coming out of China's State Administration of Foreign Exchange saying that promote and two-way opening up of financial markets to release some of this pressure. So it's not a given that it's a surge for this sector. I actually think we might see a pickup in inflation globally across all currencies. And our take on how best to take advantage of potential renminbi appreciation would actually be through equities, because with equities, as opposed to sort of cash, you've got a degree of intrinsic inflation protection there.
Interesting. We're still meeting to Mr. Martin Hennigy, the Asian Investment Director for St. James's Place, on what the Biden administration might mean for Asian markets moving forward. You know, less than a week into the office, and one of the key things he's done, Mr. Hennigy, was revoke the building of the Keystone Pipeline, much to the chagrin of Canada. And there's also a bit of a wait and see approach as to how they might handle it around. Of course, all of this impacting the oil and gas sector, with the number of markets in Asia, especially in the ASEAN region, from Singapore to Thailand and Malaysia, having significant exposure to commodity prices and the oil and gas prices at the moment. What do you think the Biden administration will mean for the oil and gas space, and what kind of impact or potential risks and opportunities might there that yield for some of these oil and gas sectors across this region?
Well, I would say the measures that Biden has been implementing so far might put some pressure on the supply side, but at the same time, we still for now see the demand side quite weak as well. So, if I should pinpoint one particular reason that could bring potential sustained and quite potentially sharper upside to the oil market over the next few years, I would bring it back to the inflation, potential inflation and U.S. dollar weakness issue, in the United States. So if one is speculating, I mean, we are not recommending short-term speculation in any commodities anyway, but I wouldn't underestimate the potential of inflation resulting in appreciation of any physical assets across the board over the next 5 to 10 years.
Interesting. Now, as we mentioned a while, Mr. Hennigy, we've talked about who might stand the most to gain or lose between the current state of relations between China and the United States under this Biden administration. But of course, there's a lot of potential economies and markets in the Asia-Pacific region that might get affected or might get impacted or bit left by the wayside, especially some of these open and trade-reliant economies like Singapore. We've seen the impact of what the trade tensions of the last 4 years have had on open economies like Singapore. What is now your economic and market outlook for this country, especially given the early indicators of how the Biden administration and their policies might shape the region?
Sure. Maybe the first thing to note is that actually markets and economies are not always necessarily one-to-one correlated.
True.
It depends on quite a few different numbers. For example, what stocks do you actually have trading on that exchange and others? And then, of course, also what's the current valuation levels, what is priced in already, et cetera, et cetera. But let me just say two things here that I think is important to bear in mind. The first thing is that the Singapore stock universe is actually pretty limited. So over the last 6 years, I'm sure you're aware, we have seen more delistings on that market than listings. Quite a lot of companies have been going to Hong Kong instead, which sort of seems to have been the center of gravity for stock listing. And so I would suggest it's quite important to for investors based in Singapore who might already have a Singapore property and other Sing dollar assets for the equity proportion of the investment to really look for global diversification. Now, that said, are those stocks that are still listed in Singapore a necessarily bad investment? I don't really would suggest that they necessarily are, given, you know, the valuations actually happen to be quite reasonable there when you compare with global markets. They may not be the strongest growth stories, but, you know, so as part of a globally diversified portfolio, I think holding some exposure is okay, but bear in mind, if one is only focused on that, one can really miss out on opportunity. Now, economy-wise, I'm not too pessimistic. I'm reasonably optimistic on Singapore. I think diplomatically, it's really achieved to position itself between, you know, China and the West, keeping good relations with everybody across the board. You've seen a lot of events being, international events being hosted this year. You also see, you know, some of the economic sectors in Singapore doing reasonably well, given the circumstances, manufacturing, biotech, semiconductors, etc., has all been quite strong. So if then COVID should reduce, the other areas of construction, trade service, etc., might come back again as well. So I'm reasonably optimistic on the economy.
Interesting insights there. We'll have to leave it there, but I'd like to thank Mr. Martin Haneke, Asia Investment Director for St. James's Place, for joining us today on Money FM 89.3 to talk about what the Biden administration will mean for Asian markets and also giving us their outlook for Singapore's markets and the economy. Mr. Haneke, thank you so much. Hope you and your loved ones continue to stay safe and good health out there in Hong Kong, and wish you a great rest of the Monday ahead. Cheers, sir.
Thank you very much.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.